Hello, everyone, and welcome to tonight's episode of Pivotal Change. I'm your host, Ryan Kahn with CS Business Consulting, and this is a show that is all about leadership, entrepreneurship, business, executives, anybody that has or wants to grow their influence, and hopefully you are taking notes with your pen and paper. We have a very special guest on tonight's episode, a very good friend of mine, but before I formally introduce our guest, I want you to watch this video clip.
Yikes. We turned out a Greco-Roman wrestling in the final of the men's heavyweight division. The overwhelming favorite is the guy you just saw, Russian Alexander Karelin. These are the numbers. Olympic gold medals, 3. World titles, 9. Career losses in international competition, 0 since debuting in 1987. But those don't tell a ruble's worth of this story. Karelin weighed 15 pounds upon birth, and imposing has been his middle name ever since. He comes to the land down under from the forbidding and vast Russian region of Siberia, perhaps the most feared athlete in Olympic history. Karelin is a chiseled figure of muscle and might who seems more fit for a comic strip than reality. He is at once Hercules in his strength and in his intimidating powers, like Medusa, the Gorgon who would turn men into stone. And in the case of Karelin, we're talking about gifted grapplers, uncommonly large. You may recall 4 years ago in Atlanta when his final victim, American Matt Gaffari, was reduced to tears, although emotion played a part in that. Here now, in his own words, the 33-year-old Siberian strongman.
Do you need a reason to fear me? I fight for my beloved Russia. I haven't lost a match in 13 years.
Champion olympique et médaille d'or représentant la Fédération de Russie.
Alexander Karelin of the Soviet Union.
Olympic champion and gold medalist. Alexander Karelin, the Federation of Russia.
3 Olympics, 3 gold medals, 9 world championships. My soul, complicated and fierce, is pure Russian.
Wow. Alexander Karelin is without a doubt statistically the greatest athlete of all modern times. He had a professional wrestling record of 887-1, and my guest on tonight's show, Rulon Gardner, made him 887-2. Welcome to the show, my man.
How are we doing?
We are doing well. Well, I'll tell you what, man, the more I get to know you, the more I enjoy the person that you are. You have so much to offer. But what I want to do is I want to contrast the way that you built yourself up. I want to know a little bit more about you and how you finished the match here. So I want to watch another clip, and I want to have you talk about the clip where we finish the match and start the conversation there, and then we'll work backwards into your life.
Yikes. We turn.
Rulon Gardner, barrel chested young man, was rather braggadocio about his chances in this Olympics, but I guess we should have never doubted him. He believed in his abilities and his conditioning, and it has been a factor.
His conditioning is his best weapon. He brought it into play in this match. It became a battle of wills, and Gardner has a heart the size of that 56-inch chest.
Well, time is running down. There's only 2 seconds to go.
Incredible. Walk us through the end of that match, what it took to beat Alexander Karelin.
Well, I think it kind of started from probably day one of my life, growing up on the farm in Wyoming, but finally getting to a position or a spot where you finally made the Olympic team. And it wasn't just, you know, getting on that match. It was every workout, every day, every situation that I had been through up to that point, because a month before the Olympics, I was wrestling the number 2 Russian, Yuri Petrakiev, and I got pinned in 10 seconds, and I hadn't been pinned since high school, junior high. And so for me, getting out there to that match, I had nothing to lose. I was guaranteed a silver medal. You know, and a lot of people said, oh, you probably thought you were going to win. I'm like, no. I'm like, I knew I had a chance to compete. And that's all I've ever had to offer, is you walk out there, you compete, you know, being an entrepreneur, you know, pivoting and making that decision, I can go out there and show up and just get a silver medal. That's what most people thought going into that match, that I was just going to roll over. But for me, you know, going out there, starting the match, our coaches had a philosophy, get in the space, push them, challenge them, you know, let them know you're not just going to fade away. You're going to come out there and you believe you could beat them. And my coach has said right before we started wrestling, you know, he's nervous, you know, you can beat him, Ruin, this is your chance. And so I didn't know if I could, but you know what? The one thing about life is you never know what you can do unless you try to do what you need to do.
I like that a lot. And I really want to draw out what you said about your coach's instruction, his wisdom about you get out there, you push, you fight, you give them what you've got. You don't come up to an obstacle, no matter how dominant it may appear, and not give your best efforts. And your best efforts resulted in the greatest upset in sports history, which is incredible. So tell me a little bit more. You were talking about the farming, your childhood. I want to know a little bit more about your raising and kind of the struggle, the hurdles, the obstacles that you overcame in getting your rise to just high school wrestling, college wrestling, and ultimately the Olympics.
Yeah, most people think, oh, you know, that Olympic moment, you know, was something that you dreamed of as a kid. And for me, that was probably the furthest thing from the truth, because growing up, I was the youngest of 9 kids, and we grew up on a dairy farm and, you know, just south of Yellowstone, you know, Jackson, Wyoming. And so living there and being raised there on the farm, you know, it had chores that started at 6 o'clock in the morning and ended up at midnight. You know, that was what our summers were like, beautiful summers, but cold winters. And we just learned to deal with adversity. And then when I started schooling, they realized I had a learning disability, reading comprehension, speed of reading. I struggled at school. And I was told by a lot of, you know, the teachers and the advisors, you know, that if you go to high school, you'll probably barely graduate. And if you graduate, you'll never make it in college. And so don't have that expectation. But the family around me, my brothers, my sisters, you know, Reynold, my brother, he was my, you know, biggest nemesis, but then also he is my best friend. And I got so much, I think, motivation from my mom. She went back to nursing school. She went when she was in her 50s, and, you know, she just went out there and she, you know, graduated with a nursing degree, worked until she was 72 years old as a nurse, had a lot of physical, you know, issues, and she just, you know, overcame it. And she was kind of my protector, and having my mom there by my side, I left for college. You know, I ended up, you know, not making the varsity wrestling team till my senior year. It took me till I was 17 years old, all that adversity and all those losses, all those practices, feeling, you know, that I couldn't beat my brother, you know, they all motivated me to keep working harder and harder until finally, you know, I went to state, one state, and, you know, talked to the advisor, and they said, if you go to college, you'll fail. And my mom, I left for school. She's like, keep your feet on the ground. Remember who you are, where you're from, and what you believe in. And that was kind of what I did when I went to college and went to Ricks Junior College, you know, had 2 junior college offers out of high school, ended up going in and, you know, showing up. And my college coach is, you know, he watched me lose my only match my senior year. And I asked him, why did you recruit me? He says, because, you know, with 2 seconds left in the match, you still thought you could win. And I said, well, of course. He goes, that's what makes it different. Most people quit, you know, with 30 seconds left. Oh, I don't have it. And well, you know, world championships in 01, the year after I won the Olympics, I pinned the guy, the new Russian that had pinned me a month before the Olympics. I threw and pinned him as time expired. And, you know, if you have time on the clock, you have opportunities in front of you, you got to maximize them. If you don't see and reach your potential in everyday life, you know, you'll never reach that goal. And college, I won the national championships in the junior college ranks. And then I transferred to University of Nebraska and got into Lincoln. And they told me day one in class, you know, wanted to be a teacher, coach, and a physical education teacher. If you do it, you'll never graduate. You're not smart enough. You're not good enough. It's the fourth hardest degree. If you do this, you'll never make it. And I told him, you give me a chance. Don't tell me I can't, because I will. I may not be here tomorrow, but eventually over time, I will succeed. You know, it may not be pretty. It may not be the way that people want it to be. As an athlete, as a wrestler in college, I'm 6'1". And, you know, Sylvester Terquet, who won nationals my senior year in college, was 6'8". And right. He was just dominant. And ended up my senior year at Nebraska, I ended up, you know, taking fourth at the NCAAs and was so distraught. You know, I sat back and my mom's like, why are you here? You know, I said, to wrestle. And she goes, well, yeah, you know, wrestling's over now. What are you going to do? Why are you here? Student athlete. First and foremost, you're a student. Get your degree, get your teaching degree. And I went back and spent 2 more years. And just like kind of every situation in my life, you know, I went back and, you know, sat down with the advisor. I said, well, why did it take me 6.5 years, 2 years at JUCO, you know, JUCO college, and then 4 years at Nebraska? And they're like, well, when you transferred, we didn't think you would make it more than, a semester. So we just thought you would flunk out. And I said, well, why did it take me that long? And they said, well, when you transferred out of 64 credits, 16 of them transferred. And I was furious. I'm like, why didn't you tell me that when I transferred? They said, why didn't you ask? And so, ask and you will receive. That's one of the things that, Proverbs you go in life, you've got to ask and, you got to educate yourself. You have to learn your surroundings, and in wrestling and life and education, you got to know the people, the challenges, you got to know your enemies. And part of when I get the opportunity to speak to a lot of groups, I talk about enlisting other people, brothers and sisters and family, and not just the people support you, your enemies. You want to see.
Let me jump in right there real quick, because you're saying some really important things, and people may or may not know this, but you have your book, and I'm hearing a bunch of your principles, obviously, just coming out in your book. But I want to highlight, because we only have a couple of seconds left for a commercial break, that you said, if you have time left on the clock, then you've got opportunities in front of you. And I just want to think about, as we're getting ready to jump in and talk more about your mindset, it sounds like you and your family and your coaches, you made a habit out of, you just overcome obstacles and you push on. Is that correct? Does that pushing have some significance?
Oh yeah. My family, brothers and sisters, that was our mentality. I was 8 years old. I lost a brother to aplastic anemia. That year our barn burnt down. My parents said, we're going to rebuild. Yeah. We're going to go in debt. We're going to, really financially struggle. But my parents and my dad said, I want to raise you kids on the farm and teach you how to work. And that's the one thing about it, is every one of us has our, I'm the least educated with my bachelor's degree. Everybody else has their PhD or MBA. And that came from the value of growing up on the farm. And you just keep, striving your goals, and you get, all of us in one group, my family, we're all strong willed because, to survive on the farm. That's just the way it was growing up.
But let's talk more about that strong will in just a second. I'm going to cut us to commercial break. We're going to stick a pin in this conversation, and we're going to be back with the Olympic champion right after this message for more Pivotal Change.
What do you think?
We are back from the break, and here again with Rulon Gardner, the Olympic champion, the gold medalist, and we are having a great conversation about his background, defeating the most dominant force in athletic history. And then we're also started getting into his background, his family, and specifically, we're now talking about mindset and willpower. So I want to keep jumping along those lines. And Rulon, I know that you've had some pretty crazy events occur in your life. And I think the audience could really benefit from you telling us maybe about a couple of those critical events and what went through your mind, the mindset that you had during the moment and afterwards, and just a conversation on willpower in general. Can you share one or two of those with us?
Yeah, of course. And I think a lot of it started from, being a boy who was raised on the farm, back to it, because every day, for me, myself, every day was a near-death experience, and the tractors to everything. And after I had won the Olympics the year after, I came back and I threw Yuri, and I ended up winning the semis, and I won the world championships. And I looked around, and I'm 6'1", the second shortest wrestler was 6'4", everybody else was 6'9" to 6'4", and they were ginormous. But it doesn't matter the size, it matters the the fight and the dog, that it goes out on the mat. And that's the one thing I did, is I went out there and I pushed myself. And, not only did I have that, I went out the year after, winning the world championships, two-time world Olympic champion. And then I went out and I was snowmobiling with two of my friends. It was Valentine's Day, February 4th, 2014, and I, or 2002, and went out there with two of my friends, and I got stranded, I got separated. And I ultimately, got frostbite. And, I think we have a picture of me, on my snowmobile, and that was the day of the accident. And, that day I didn't have my winter coat on. I wasn't correctly prepared. I didn't have everything on like I needed to. And I ended up getting stranded and got separated and, spent all night in the wilderness. I had a vision about 4 o'clock in the morning where I saw Jesus and God. And, there was a group that was within 200 yards of me that, didn't dare drop in the river. I actually was riding in and out of the river on the rocks. And, they're thinking, he's nuts. He's on a mission. And I said, well, that's what it takes sometimes to survive. And so, you know, came back and got rescued luckily at 10 o'clock. So it was a total of 18 hours at 25 below zero. My core temperature was 80 degrees when I got rescued. Oof. And came back through, you know, the frostbite and, you know, went to the doctor, got there. My core temperature was the 80. It finally got up to enough to where they could thaw my feet out. And the doctor simply said, you're just lucky to be alive and you should be dead. Your feet are going to be cut off at the ankle within the week. You know, you'll never walk again. You'll never wrestle. You'll always use crutches or a wheelchair and you're just lucky to be alive. And for me at that point, it was good. But then as soon as I got there, my sister showed up and her name is, she hates it, but it's Scary Jerry because she's a cardiologist. And she's like, I talked to the best specialist in the world. And that was the one thing, you know, I had great coaches. I had great family. I had great leadership around me. And I support them. You know, I surrounded myself with the support that I would be successful because of having those people. And we went through and the doctor ultimately, you know, we did four surgeries. I went to the hyperbaric chamber for a month. And, you know, after the first surgery, there was no blood flow. And the doctor's like, you know, there's no blood flow. And so I went to the hyperbaric chamber and luckily my feet started to heal. They started to come back and I ended up losing one toe. I lost the big toenail on the right foot and it was a lot worse than my left foot, but I ended up, making it through that night, made it through, got back. In August, my training partner, the guy that, you know, was number two behind me, won the world team trials and then went to the worlds and became a world champion. I walked in the wrestling room in August and they said, you can't walk, you can't even function. You know, first practice, I trip and fell 20 times and got back up. And they're like, you can't even compete. Byers the world champion. You'll never beat him again.
And hold I on, said, can I back up just a second? I want to talk about maybe three pieces in time. And I want you, if you're willing to open up just a little bit, tell me about the moment you realized I am absolutely separated, absolutely drenched, and I'm absolutely in a life and death situation. Can you walk us through some of the self-talk that happened in your brain right before that moment where you're seeing God saying, here I come, Lord, take me. But you made it out. What was the self-talk going on in those moments?
Well, the God come take me. I'm like, I ain't ready to go. And I woke up out of, you know, the vision I had. And I'm like, nope, you know, you're still here. You're still alive. You're going to fight to the death. And so I didn't accept death. And that was the one thing about it is I got stranded. I'm like, okay, you're here, you're cold. What are you going to do? You know what? You got to get tough. And, you know, it's like, I remember looking at my cell phone. And back then I had a sweatshirt, my hands were inside my sweatshirt and I'd have to get it open, go inside my bib, get my cell phone on, thaw my finger back out. And, you know, the temperature was between 25 and 30 below zero. And I'm sitting there and I turn my phone on. And, you know, from 4:30 at night when I first got wet to about 7:30 where I knew I was, you know, they knew where I was at. It was Valentine's Day. We were supposed to go to dinner up in Jackson Hole. They know I'm stranded. So I just started thinking, right, you know, it's going to be 4:30 in the morning. You know, turn your phone on. I turned my phone on. It was midnight. And at that point, I said, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
But, you know, the writing's on the wall. Death is coming. You know, what are you going to do? And I remember my feet starting to go numb and moving them inside my boots. You know, my feet were hurting and the toes were getting cut by the ice that was inside the boot. I remember sitting there being like, you know what? And everybody's like, oh man, you know, afterwards, it must've been so painful. I said, no, I turned the pain off. I said, what can I do? I said, my feet are freezing. Stop moving your feet. Stop feeling the cold. And now just turn it off. And, you know, people, how can you turn pain off? I said, you'd be surprised what the mind can do. And the mind is one of the best things. And the reason I survived that night is knowing how impactful my mom was in my life. And she was the reason. If you ever watched The Shining with Jack Nicholson, the end of the movie, and he's frozen to death. And the fact that my mom, if I could have drowned, I would have drowned easy. You could have burned me alive. I wouldn't have minded. But that night, knowing that they would pull my body out and my mom would see me, she wouldn't have ever gotten to where I was at because I was way up in the mountains and it was nasty and where I was stranded. And there's no way that she could have gotten there, but she would have thought, you know what, here's my son. And he gave up. And that vision there is the reason I'm still alive today.
Let me call. So you're saying some pretty pivotal things. And I want to try. I know that at the end of the show, we're going to do a lot of direct connections into the business world, but I think it's important for people to hear this. One, you surrounded yourself with great people that led you into lots of things in your life to overcome what I would say the difficult, but not critical obstacles. But in that moment, you had a couple of things. You made a statement in the first segment that says, if you've got time on the clock, you still got opportunity in front of you. And you said, I'm not frozen, I'm not dead yet, so I'm going to keep fighting until I am dead. So to me, that's the, hey, in your body, painful and frozen, I'm still got a heartbeat, I still got time on the life clock, and I'm going to keep fighting. And so I think you lived out your words there through that mindset. And then the clarity of getting outside of the pain, right? It's just pain. It goes away. Even if it goes away at death, it's going to go away at some point. So keep on pushing. And the mindset most people don't recognize is that you can literally turn off the pain or dial it down so low that you can function despite where you're at. How much did wrestling and the discipline, the tenacity, and the just drive and grind of wrestling connect to you being able to survive that moment?
Well, I think that's the two work hand in hand, because you know you're out there, you wrestle, and that was the one thing I really had was my conditioning. And I wasn't big and strong. I didn't know how to really throw. I didn't start wrestling Greco-Roman until after college. And so, you know, within 5 years of starting wrestling Greco-Roman, I won the Olympics. And it's like, how is that possible? Because you commit to something. And I remember, you know, being out there and being stranded and just realizing, you know what, here's your one distinct time where you can, you know, kind of define yourself. And it's the same way as wrestling. You know, I remember practices at the end, you know, if you're out of shape and you're tired, you're exhausted, everybody's tired. But in wrestling, you know, all it can do is hurt your lungs for a minute and then you'll recover. And the more you work, the body's a muscle. The more you work with your body and your muscle, the better it will do. And the more efficient it will become, the better it will be able to recover. And most people say the only reason you're alive is because you were so big. Yes, that's true. But also the mental factor. Because most people, when they get stranded, you know, snowmobiling or just stranded out in the wilderness, a lot of them take their clothes off. And I started losing my mind. I'm like, oh, I'm going to rip my, you know, I had a fleece top and then I had a sweatshirt and I had a shirt on. That's all I had. I didn't have my winter coat. I didn't prepare directly to be stranded. So I wasn't prepared. And I remember trying to take it off and I'm halfway having my sweatshirt off, my fleece top. And I'm like, hold on, if I take it off, I'll take the sweatshirt off and then I'll be naked, or at least the top half. I'm like, even though it's frozen, even though it's hard, it's still keeping heat in. And so I think the wrestling gave me that mindset to look forward, look backwards, and look at perspective. Because if you don't self-analyze in life, you don't look at, you know, where you've came and where you want to go. If you're always looking forward, you'll never know truly what you've learned from your past, and you don't know what you truly want to achieve going forward. And so I think perspective is one of the biggest factors. Keeping my wits about me that night is what gave me that direction.
I love that a lot. And then we've only got about a minute. Can you quickly tell us about the other critical one that you shared with me before in the lake?
Well, there was a, I'm going to do two of them in a minute. We had Lake Powell, you know, 2007, I was with two guys and the pilot forgot we were descending and he got to 100 feet. I thought I should say something, but I didn't. We hit the water at 150 miles an hour. They jumped in and I'm sitting there. I'm like, where are we going? They're like, get in the water, we're swimming. And I asked the pilot to come help me. He got to me, I dunked him. He swam away from me. And it took me 2 hours. I just did the backstroke. I finally got to the beach. I went over, I found them, and they were sitting there and they were hurting. And all three of us made it until 8:30 the next morning. But right after, you know, the match coming into 2004, I was going to practice on Monday. Lady pulled out in front of me on my Harley and I T-boned her. I went over in the car, did a front dive roll, landed it. And then 3 days later, I was playing basketball and I dislocated my right wrist. The doctor's like, you're done. I lost at nationals. My wrist dislocated a few times the next week, put three pins in it. And, you know, a week before the Olympic trials, he said, we pull those pins out, you'll never recover. So you're stupid. You're foolish, but pulled the pins out, went, you know, made the Olympic team, went and won an Olympic bronze medal. You know, it's just a limitation, you know, physicality, but then it's just survival skills. You know, most people don't go through adversity like that, but sometimes you do.
Yeah. So that's a perfect place for me to hit a little pause button real quick. We're going to talk about all of that adversity and change and then how you turn that over into helping other people. So everyone else, sit tight. We'll be back with more Rulon and more pivotal change in just a moment. We've reached the halfway point, and we are still going to continue down this incredible journey of Roland Gardner's life. And we unfortunately are kind of fast-tracking some of the stories and the details. But if you ever get the chance, you guys need to look up Roland or get a hold of him. You'll figure out how to do that later today and really dive in. He also has a book that we're going to talk about at the end of the episode. But we just talked about one of his survival stories in great depth, and two of the other ones we learned about as well. But one thing I want to ask you is, how have you taken all of these experiences, all of these crazy adventures and successes and failures you had? That's a path. That's a journey. How are you helping other people now? And how important is it for us to coach and mentor and help build relationships to help other people along their life journey?
What's pretty crazy and what's pretty amazing is having the opportunity to have spoken, you know, to hundreds of corporate groups and that type of stuff. And then going in and speaking at schools, you know, I got my teaching degree because I wanted to give back to them, but I also wanted to continue to develop myself in the next level. And so for me, those experiences kind of defined me and made me the person I am today. And, you know, I have people that contact me all the time. And, you know, some of these kids now that are going through school that I coach and I help work with, some of these kids are like, oh man, I can't even imagine what you went through. And it's like, you can't, but you know what? Let me give you a little insight. And, you know, that's just where people are at. You don't know what you possibly can do unless you've actually gone out and tried it. And if you fail, what do? You learn from it, you get back up. And same way wrestling the bronze medal match at the Olympics, you know, I came off the mat and they're like, you're a failure, you're a loser, you didn't win two gold medals. I'm like, not a failure, not a loser. Well, you didn't win. Well, now what? Go win a bronze medal. You know, and it was the Iranian, he was 6'9". I went out and I beat him 3-0. And that's just the way life is. You know, you pick up the pieces, you know, from great success all the way from failure. You know, you learn more from your losses than your victories. And every day is a learning situation. Every day in practice, you did almost a perfect practice. But you know what? There's still stuff you can work on. And that's what life is about, learning from your experiences. And so, you know, since then, I've gotten now into insurance. I got into real estate. And I do a lot of insurance, and, you know, insurance is about mitigating risk and, you know, looking at a potential problem. And my family growing up on the farm, my parents never told us maybe not ride on the fender of the tractor and get ran over, or, you know, any of those type of things. I've fallen out of pickup trucks. I've, you know, had pieces of equipment. I had siblings throwing hay bales on my head. You know, it was just a continual battle of being on the farm. And, you know, when I got to college, I just took that same desire, that same drive to keep moving forward, you know, at the Olympics. And then after the Olympics, it's like, now what? You know, most people are like, oh, life should be easy. Well, being an Olympic athlete, you know, you didn't make millions, you know, you made just enough money. You know, we made $900 a month when I was competing. That's all they made. That's all they paid you. And so you didn't do it for the money. You did it because you love the sport. And then once I retired from the sport, I then said, okay, what's the next chapter? You know, speaking and now insurance and now, you know, the real estate stuff. And, you know, having my learning disability, going back to it, my biggest, even above and beyond wrestling, my biggest struggle was my learning disability, overcoming that and realizing that if I, you know, have to go in and study harder than most kids, my one sister has a photographic memory, not me. It takes me 3 or 4 times as long to learn something. And I had so many high school and junior high, elementary principal coaches that just walked away and they're like, you'll never get it. You'll never understand. And I was at practice last night with my youth and my wrestling team, and I'm watching technique and I'm going through and I'm being, you know, not critical, but just pointing out things. And I'm like, I can see what you're doing and I can photographic and I can remember every little detail, where your hand is, what you're doing here. And that's just the details you have to get, because the more you immerse yourself into something, the more you learn how to master something. If you see something, you're like, I want to try that. You try it, but you fail. What do you got to do? You got to learn from it. Try it again. Try it again. Try it again. And maybe if it's not the right path, you alter it a little bit and then you find another way to succeed. That's just the way life is.
I like that a lot. And what really I enjoy about you, you've had specific obstacles and specific people in your life that were on the negative side. Like you said, your learning disabilities. And I know you and I both share a passion for helping the youth, the younger side, you know, kids and young adults. And so, you know, through our coaching and stuff like that, you also have taken the extra time to say, there was somebody else, and there is somebody else in my shoes who has a learning disability or has a negative person in their life telling them they can't be enough. Well, I'm going to show them and tell them the example from where I came from so that they can be the next example. And I think that's a really hallmark trait of who you are, whether you want to admit it or not. But that's really important. So in doing that, tell us about the genuine nature of helping other people with your experiences. What has that done for your ability to build relationships, not just network, but build relationships?
Well, I guess the question is, we met, you know, a few months ago at the U.S. Nationals, and we went and we were watching wrestling. And, you know, last week I was in Nashville, Tennessee, doing a corporate speech. What did you see? What did you see in me that set me apart than, you know, most people?
Well, for me, I like watching that you are passionate. There's people that are really smart. They're really intelligent. They can rattle off all kinds of things about whatever their industry is. But you are passionate. And here's a, for example, you did your whole book signing session and stuff like that. And you basically had a conversation with every person in line, and each and every one of those people, it may have taken a minute longer, but they had a personal connection to you at that point. Most people are like, give me the book, sign it, have a great day. Oh, to Bob, you know, have a great day, right? And they sign the book. But you were like, hey, what's your name? Where are you from? Oh my gosh, you have kids. Wait, do you want a picture with me in a headlock? You know, and you know, that's as far as people think of celebrity, right? You don't buy into your own celebrity status. You're like, I'm a normal guy with a cool story. Here's my story and how it can help you. And, you know, so I appreciate that about you. And I don't mean to just, you know, kind of sit here and brag on you in front of you, but the importance to that is you've got the ability to do that. And now you have, and we're going to talk here towards the end of the episode more about how that part of you comes out into your new field, into your new career. But in the past, what types of relationships that you didn't suspect would be one of your relationships ended up serving you really well?
I think, you know, like yourself, you know, we met in Vegas and we chatted and your son was there and, you know, we gave him a book, he got a book, you know, he saw that and he's like, oh, that's cool. You know, and ultimately, you know, it always has to make an appearance.
That's my right.
There, you know, there it is. I have other beautiful medals that I love and cherish, but there's my Olympic gold medal I got in Sydney. And I've had people, you know, that have come to me the last 25 years. That's how long ago it's been since I won the Olympics. And they come up and they're like, you know, oh, I met you at the airport this day and this day. I'm like, oh, and you were flying to here and you were wearing this and I met your kids. And they're just like, how can you remember that? I said, because every day, every relationship in life you value, you have to appreciate, because you don't know how many times after my frostbite, every day I live a day on this earth, I really understand it's a blessing and it's a miracle. So I try to perceive, I try to, you know, see all these things and the people around me and the coaches and just all the greatness of the people there. And I appreciate it and I value those things. And, you know, being there speaking in Nashville, you know, I was there 6 hours, you know, meeting people, talking to people. I spoke for an hour and 6 hours, and that's what, you know, the group said. And they're like, you know, when we were speaking to IT people, engineers, and, you know, I didn't usually get responses. I was waiting for something like, hey, you know, smiling, you know, people laughing. And they're like, that's just this group. They're very analytical. They're very processing, but your story was perfect. And they're like, you know, it was blown away by people. And then just seeing you, how you can interact, you can joke, you can have fun, you can just be a normal person. And that's the way you want to be in life. You know, after all is said and done, you know, you die, people are going to remember, you know what? He was a person that cared. He was a person that was a real person. You were genuine. And that's hard to find anymore because you believe the hype that people put on you. My mom, like Ruin, you grew up milking cows and you can always go back to them. So just appreciate the journey that you're on.
You know, I really want to point out what you just said about appreciating the journey that you're on. I think a lot of people, it's great to have a vision. One of the things that I teach people is you need to have a vision, create an action plan, set goals, and get after it, right? But I think we can often too fixate on that vision that we don't live in the presence. We lose our genuine ability to connect to others because our head is in the clouds someplace else and we're not absorbing the moment. And I know not everybody has a critical life event of like, hey, I almost froze to death in the snow, right? And so now I appreciate every minute of life as a blessing. But people can develop that mindset by surrounding them by those types of people and having that glow rub off on them. And I think your word choice of genuine, the genuinely care, the genuine relationships. I do a lot of studying and leadership, and that's one of the most desirable traits that a subordinate has of their supervisor is that they demonstrate actual care, the genuine nature of it, not the fake. We can sniff that out pretty quick, right? But the genuine care. And so that's important. Let me ask you a little bit more about specifically coaching. Because you said, hey, I don't want to nitpick and critique people, but in relationships that we have at some point, and coaching is easy because the athlete expects you to correct them at some point. But in life, you have to come to somebody and say, hey, something's not going right. Let's identify it, fix it, change it. Let's get better. How has that carried you throughout your life? We've only got about 45 seconds for an answer.
Well, last night in practice, you know, I had a new girl that, you know, started coming in, started wrestling, you know, on Monday, and then she came in again last night. And I'm going through the details, and she's kind of looking at me like, are you being real? You know, I'm like, yeah, this is what you're doing. This is what you're doing wrong. And I would have the other kids in the room show her how to do it correctly. And it's like, hey, you know, we fixed it with them. We'll fix it with you. We got to go back and fix these things that we're not doing. And what's kind of funny is when we were in Nashville, you know, you had to go, you had an appointment, and then you came back and we were at the hotel. What did we do in the lobby there at the hotel with your son?
We wrestled, man.
Yeah. We were covering all those things, and people were like, you're still here. You're still talking. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, you know, people are like, and I'm showing technique, and they're just like, this is, you know, most people have that persona. It's like, right. You know, my persona is, did I make a difference in your son's life? Did I make a difference in their lives? And, you know, every day, I don't want to just impact one person. I want every person that is around me to be impacted by, well, what a story, what a hard work, he made a difference. Or that guy just has tenacity, you know.
Let me jump in right there, because you're actually bridging the gap to what we're about to do. So we're going to come back for the final segment of the night with more Rulon Gardner and more Pivotal Change. Sit tight. We are pushing down to the final segment of the night. And like Rulon says, if there's still time on the clock, there's still an opportunity. So we're going to use that opportunity to get the end of the story here and draw everything we've talked about, his amazing ability to prevail, become an Olympic champion, to his background and everything that he overcame in his life, and the stories, to the hardships, the tragedies, and how all that blends into him helping and building relationships and coaching other people and having that genuine impact on their lives, to translating that now to more into the business world and entrepreneurship, leadership. And Rulon, you're into some new industries. You've got a new career ahead of you now. So tell us about, you know, the insurance, the real estate, and the game that you're in now, and how you use your background to be successful in that field.
Yeah. Now I went back and I was thinking, you know, what are good fields to be in, you know, and insurance is one of the good fields. And, you know, there's captive and there's independent. You know, captive is you sell one product, you know, it's usually pricier. And, you know, I had a lot of people that are like, oh, you got to do this. I'm like, well, I only sell one product. And, well, yeah, but they're for your friends. I'm like, well, shouldn't I be a good steward to, you know, fiduciary to people? You know, you want to go out there and give them the best price insurance. That's why, you know, we work with independents. We work with, you know, commercial. And, you know, one of the things we do, we don't just talk about sales point. That's not our goal. Our goal is service. Our goal is safety. Our goal is helping people. And as I went through it, I had to start making better choices, you know, from riding my motorcycle, taking this risk, taking that risk. It just taught me how to look in the future long-term wise about making, you know, better decisions. You know, it's not a matter of if something's going to happen that is bad. And my question is, how bad is it going to be? And how can you mitigate the chance of death? You know, and that's where I'm at. You know, people are like, you just push the envelope. I'm like, the pilot, you know, that I wasn't flying the pilot when we went down in the lake. You know, I was there, guilt by association. You know, Jim Rome, he used to talk. He's like, I don't want to be Rulon's friend. I don't want to hang out with him. But if I'm stranded, I want to be with that guy. And it's like, well, I guess that's, you know, it's least way, you know. And, you know, he had the other comment, you know, if he doesn't have bad luck, he wouldn't have any luck at all. But, you know, it's all how you perceive things, you know, bad experience or a learning opportunity.
Yeah, I love that. I think learning opportunity is what I always like to refer to things as. You're going to experience the bad in life, just like you're going to experience the good in life. But when I use it, there's an old law enforcement saying called fail forward. You're going to screw up, you're going to make a mistake. And, you know, as long as you don't violate some civil rights or shoot somebody when you're not supposed to, pretty much all those mistakes are fixable, right? And so you take each failure as a lesson so you can move forward, fail forward. And I think you just kind of articulated that mindset there. You know, and I would say out of all the people that probably have pretty keen life experience in how to judge risk and know what type of situations are going to lead to disaster and chaos and calamity, you know, you've had your healthy dose. You're kind of an expert in the field, which probably lends to you having the experiences with, like, this can really damage a family. This can damage an individual if they are not covered properly. If they don't have these assurances about them, the death and dismemberment, you know, that could cripple generations of people. But if you can at least have the fiduciary side of getting them covered, they don't collapse on multiple areas, even if a life is tragically changed. So I really appreciate those comments and things like that. So the stories, go ahead.
Can I just, real quick, I had a guy from the Weather Channel, they came in, they wanted to kind of reenact and kind of learn about my frostbite. And, you know, this wilderness survival guy is like, from the Weather Channel, he's like, seven things dealing with hypothermia and frostbite could kill you. And you survived every one of them. He's like, I don't even know how to explain how you made it through what you did. He said, but it's a miracle you're still here. And I said, yeah. I said, that's my life. You know, welcome to my party.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of times, you know, not the entire audience is theologically practicing and stuff like that, but maybe God wanted you to survive so that you had this exact story to tell. Right.
And maybe you'd be here on the show today.
That's very, very true. I try not to ignore any type of righteous influence in my life and try to act on it all. And so we're looking at, if you're going to say you do an expert job at sharing your story to connect with other professionals and just individuals in general, how would you encourage a professional to share their story and connect with people? What are just markers you're looking at, or just habits that you go through when you're meeting new people and having the opportunity to share your story?
Well, I think, you know, there's different ways of, you know, meeting people. And, you know, people said, who's the most famous person? You know, who did you look up to in your life? Well, the people I looked up to in life were my family. They're the people I knew. They're the people, the character that I knew. I didn't look at somebody on TV and say, I want to be them, because you don't know them. You know the persona of who they are. But when you meet somebody in real person and you stop and you help them out and you do those things, they're like, he is actually a nice person. He is actually somebody who cares. And, you know, it's small towns. I grew up in a small town in Wyoming, and it was rough. You know, after I won the Olympics, you know, some of the people said some negative stuff, and it's like, I never even met you. You don't even know me. Well, so-and-so said this about you. And it's like, how do you handle that? And, you know, like you said, you know, how do you make a difference? You know, you have different ways of impacting. And what's so cool is, you know, the other day there was a video, and it's a video of me, and it was me beating Corello, and some of the upsets in wrestling. They put us to dance moving. I put it on social media, and people were mocking me, came like, hey, yeah, you don't have that good of dance skills. And, you know, it's just cool stuff about, you know, how you just, you know, have fun with yourself. Because if you're just sitting there, I'm the expert, you need to listen to me. I tell kids in my club, learn from everyone. Learn from the best wrestler in the world. I learn from the guy that's not the best. You know, you never insult. I got done and I would help, you know, I'd beat somebody, I'd pin somebody, I'd help them up. I'm sorry, you know, and when the match is going, I'm not your friend, I'm not your buddy. Match is over, match before the match, hey, you're cordial to them. And a lot of times those Russians and those foreigners would come off the mat, you lost doing the medic, and, but he's my friend, he's such a nice guy, and da, 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 da. And, you know, and at the end of the day, after I had frostbite, you know, there was guys, hey, you know, how's Rulin doing? How's this? How's that? You know, will he ever wrestle again? Yeah, they wanted to beat me after I won the Olympics, but, you know, they were also being complimentary, being like, you know, I want to know him because he is a good person and a good wrestler. But, you know, after all said and done, sports is part of who we are. It's not what we are. You know, I was a wrestler, I was, you know, medical device seller, now I'm an insurance agent. Those are the things you become. You evolve, you progress. And there's some people, they do one thing and then they stop and they wait for life just to pass by. And I'm like, I want to live. I retired at 33 years old because I wanted to go out there and not have to go travel the world and try to wrestle until I was 50 years old or 40 years old. I wanted to live. I wanted to have a normal life. I was a farmer. I was so versed at so many things that, you know, if there's something out there, I want to try it, you know. And we talked earlier, you know, some people think Mount Everest and you're thinking, wow, man, that's a pinnacle. Some people think it's an obstacle. Big old mountain. What do? Some people see it as an opportunity. Right. To explore themselves. That's what life is about. You take those things and, you know, I take an obstacle and I just chop it down to size until that big old obstacle becomes what? One step at a time.
Right.
That's the only way to get to the top.
But I like what you're saying a lot, because I'm going to echo just a little bit. Is you're looking at life from the eyes of the perpetual student. Go out there, get life, get those experiences, enjoy a lot of different things, and make a lesson out of everything. It's just widening your tool set, just widening your experiences that you have to draw from, and of course expanding your relationships, ultimately your network. And one thing that I had a just kind of a slap in the face eye-opening is I went from 12 years in law enforcement, being a SWAT team leader, over a decade on SWAT, doing some really high-speed tactical stuff, and I had nothing to do with entrepreneurship in the business world. But leadership is leadership. So the transition over from law enforcement, I was like, man, I pulled from my law enforcement career like crazy in the private sector, and had no idea that there would be those crossovers. And then when I connected those two wires, man, I was firing on all cylinders. So you're making life go out and live life. Don't let it happen or pass you by. And then while you're living life, live it through the eyes of a perpetual student so you can gain experiences, relationships, and skills. So I love that a lot. So I want you to take just a moment real quick and tell us about your book. You have some principles in your book, if you don't mind just rattling those off, but I want to hear about your book, and then I want to know how people can get a hold of you after that.
You know, ultimately, step one, you're just talking about characteristics, and, you know, life is perspectives. You had to readjust it from law enforcement, intense, this, to this. Well, you can't take that skill with the firearms into the business, but you can take that mentality of the experiences you've learned and the focus you've learned, because the best thing to do is surround yourself with people. And I went to Afghanistan years ago, and each person in that unit had the ability to speak a different language. And that was what they required, because they want people out of different backgrounds that understand.
Right.
And in life, we basically build that character. When times are tough and you're looking over the edge, and I walked on the mat, I was, you know, I walk off the edge of the mat and I lose, I'm dead. That night in the wilderness, you know, I walk off the edge, I'm dead. You know, you just got to kind of play it that way. But yeah, my book is called Never Stop Pushing. You know, it's my, you know, Wyoming farm boy to, you know, the Olympic stage, Never Stop Pushing. And the best way to get a hold of me is rulergardner.com. Cell phone is 719-964-7829. Best email is rulergardnergoldmedalist@gmail.com. And, you know, I'm on Facebook, I'm on LinkedIn, you know, reach out to me. You know, it's funny how many people, you know, truly say, man, you know, I just can't believe I get to, you know, meet a legend like you. I'm like, I don't know if I'm a legend, but you know what? I'm a person that went out there and tried to do the best I could every day. One last quick story. My mom, I tried out for WWE and they offered me a lot of money, $20 million. And they said, we'll pay you. And my mom, I asked her, and she goes, really, Lynn, did I raise you to sell your values out? I'm like, no. You know, I turned down, I fought one time in Japan. I learned how to fight. They wanted me to fight Fedor, the big Russian who was undefeated, never lost. You know, he was in pride fighting Fedor Emelianenko. They offered me $1 million to take one punch and, you know, go down. My mom's like, I didn't raise you to kill people. You learned what you needed to, and that's the values that you instill. That's why we raised you the way we did, because we wanted you to remember always who you are and where you're from.
That's perfect. Rulon, thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate everything that you offer. I think we're going to probably tap you on the shoulder and bring you back. For everyone out there in the audience, thank you for paying attention tonight. I want to remind you to go out into the world and see the change and be the change. We'll catch you here next time on Pivotal Change.